This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for asking. Also joining us this morning, former Washington Capitol, Toronto Maple Leaf, Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you this morning?
Good morning, John. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has. We're lucky we got you this morning, Lou. Thanks thanks for joining us. Little hiccup last Sunday, but that's okay. Lou, how was your summer?
It was just a regular summer, other than not enough golf and... With this virus going around, you more or less you got to take care of yourself first and more or less move on, right?
Why do we always complain not enough golf? It seems to be a common complaint.
Because we all have lives after golf.
I guess we all have jobs. We all have other obligations and other priorities to attend with, and so certainly we. It's been a pretty good golf season, but gentlemen, the golf next weekend, the Ryder Cup is coming up, which is always an exciting time in the golf calendar. We'll get an opportunity to bring John Steinbrenner back next Sunday to talk Ryder Cup, but. As we promised last week, we were going to do. We didn't get a chance. We were back from our summer break last Sunday. Didn't really talk about the Jays all that much, and the Jays are in the thick of a run. Next couple of weeks, after coming up shortly, we're going to be chatting with the Blue Jays, Mitch Bannon, the Blue Jays reporter for Sports Illustrated. So we'll get an opportunity to all our listeners. We're a little bit taken back when you get an opportunity to talk about the Jays last Sunday. We're certainly they're going to be at the top of our priority list for the next few weeks and hopefully beyond the next few weeks. We'd certainly love to see the Jays make a serious run into the playoffs and probably at the expense of the New York Yankees, Mr. Franceschetti.
Well, what do you want me to say? I'm playing better baseball than the Yankees are. I tell everybody the Yankees are one trip pony. They win and die by the home run, and that's the problem that they're having right now. They don't know how to every at bat, every pitch is, or they're swinging for the fences instead of trying to put the ball in play. I think they lead the major leagues in double play balls right now. It's a tough pill to swallow, but I'll tell you, it's going to be an exciting weekend here in Toronto, or an exciting 3 days in that second last series of the season when the Yankees get together with Toronto.
Interesting, Naz, and I don't want to take away from Mitch Bannon's thunder. We're certainly going to go through this with him in great detail, but I want to take the opportunity. Naz, you're a passionate, rabid Blue Jays fan, more so than almost anybody I know. Man, this is an exciting team to watch. You go through this lineup. Look, some of the stats are unbelievable. When this was the New York Yankees, they used to call it Murderer's Row. And I guess in the world we live in, I guess probably can't use that anymore. So I'll drop that one. We'll have to come up with a new nickname for the Blue Jays. Certainly that's a nickname for the Yankees from way, way back. We'll find another one. But you look at some of the guys. If I'm a pitcher from one of the other teams and I got to go through this lineup, Guerrero, Hernandez, Semien, Bichette, Springer, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Man, you look at some of the numbers on these guys. Guerrero, 104 RBIs. Hernandez, now the RBI leader on the Jays, 106. Semien, 40 home runs, 95 RBIs. Bichette, 95 RBIs. Gurriel, 26 RBIs in September. And after having said all of that, Robbie Ray maybe is a Cy Young candidate. So, Nat, you got to be thrilled watching how this Blue Jays young talent has seemingly matured, come together at the same time.
1-7, they're the toughest team in the league for sure, and they're going to be real good at the end of the year too. I think they have a shot at the championship, the World Series. They do have a shot, and Hernandez, just think of this. He missed 3 weeks at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
How many RBIs would he have ended up with? Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, Naz. And, I mean, think about the other thing about the Jays and their accomplishments this year. I mean, they were nomads up until what? When did they come back to the Rogers Center? At the end of July? I mean, they had to play all their home games. And where'd they start off? In Dunedin?
And then Buffalo.
So they've been packing. They packed on the air miles this year. So you know, give them all the credit in the world. And you know, you look through the lineup, and George Springer, when he's been in, I mean, he's been clocking the ball. But you know, he's been hurt quite a bit. If they can keep him healthy from now through the end of the year, you know, you're tacking on more fire in that lineup. Anyways, we'll move on from Jays talk. I promise we will come back to it. We have Mitch Bannon, reporter, Blue Jays reporter, roving Blue Jays reporter for Sports Illustrated, who's kindly agreed to come on the show this morning. We'll be chatting further Blue Jays after the first break. Going to take advantage. We've got Lou Franceschetti on the show. So it would be appropriate. And later on in the show, just before I forget, Joe Theismann will be rejoining us. Of course, gives us an opportunity to talk about NFL football, which is in swing now. Bills didn't get a great result last Sunday. Naz will get a chance to talk about that. I get an opportunity to talk to Joe about the Fighting Irish, who I have mixed reviews on their performance, and that brings me to the Tide, the guys down in Alabama. Lou's, you're a big Alabama fan. Naz is a bigger Alabama fan than you, or just as much. You guys are have been loyal Alabama supporters for a long time. Got to say, I'll go to you, Naz, first, and then Lou. Alabama squeaked it out yesterday, guys. They had a tough one in the swamp against a really good Florida team. Naz,
never in doubt. And Alabama played well. Never in doubt.
Oh, I mean, that's a bit much, Ness. Never in doubt? Okay.
No.
I think you're being a little bit tongue-in-cheek there, Ness. Florida had an opportunity, the ball for two-point conversion, a couple of minutes left in the game, and they couldn't do it. But all credit to Alabama. They always find a way to win.
Wally. I was kidding.
Sorry? Yeah, I know. I know you had tongue in cheek there, Naz.
Everybody's going to be gunning for them this year, for sure. They keep recruiting all sorts of great players, and it's incredible. It's a machine, a well-oiled machine, Alabama, and they're going to be tough to beat again.
Almost unfair in a lot of ways. I mean, they obviously are the premier college program of the last 20 years, and obviously one of the. The argument can be made that they are the premier college football program of all time. You can make that argument. You can make it very well and a very convincing argument. But certainly of the last 20 years, I don't think there's any argument. Certainly during the Saban era, Alabama's always fighting for the national championship. Won quite a few of them. Lou, let me throw this stat at you. And I know last year when we talked about the Tide, you had some concerns about their defense. Florida outrushed Alabama yesterday by 167 yards. That is a pretty significant statistic. What are the concerns there, Luke?
Well, it, you know what? There really isn't any concerns. It was more or less, it was a tale of two games. It was the first quarter, which Alabama dominated, and the rest three quarters that Florida dominated. I think the difference was the one turnover that Alabama turned into a touchdown. Alabama didn't turn over the ball at all. You know, there are some plus, there's some pros and some cons. The pros are, this is a very young Alabama team. Their quarterback's a sophomore. And walking into that stadium and doing what he did in the first quarter really shut up a lot of people. But it just goes to show you that when you play Alabama, you have to be at your best. And Florida was probably at their best last night, other than their one turnover. And Alabama has to play their best game almost every single weekend. And, you know, this isn't the beginning or the end of it. They've got Texas A&M coming up in 2 weeks. They got to go into their building. They've got Ole Miss, which scored 60 points yesterday. They got LSU at the end of the year. They got Auburn. And then they might have to meet Florida again or Georgia for the Southeastern championship game. So, you know, they've always got a target on their back. But the big thing is that they came up with the 2 points, or not the 2 points, but they came up with the wing yesterday. And they've got a lot of things that they got to fix on the defensive end to make this team a viable championship team. And they had the same problem last year. When push came to shove, they topped Ohio State at the end.
Yeah, I certainly think it's good for college football if, you know, if Alabama doesn't steamroll through the entire. I think we were talking last year that the program last year may have, we were arguing, I think we were discussing at the end of the year that may have been the best college football team ever. They ran through the entire schedule. And they had talent, you know, everywhere in that lineup. I think it's better for college football that Alabama gets challenged. A few losses along the way might be a good thing for the game. And if anything, after going through all the teams you just went through, Lou, it's certainly the one thing that's without dispute or indisputable is, once again, the SEC dominates college football. Ohio State hasn't looked good so far, barely scraping through, lost the game to Oregon. Clemson hasn't looked good. These are the other perennial powers. So if you're looking for competition for Alabama this year, it seems the only place you're going to find it is the SEC. Yes?
It's interesting what Alabama's done in the past few years. They developed quarterbacks where they didn't develop quarterbacks before that. And it's incredible what these new quarterbacks they're getting are playing that well.
It's unbelievable. I never, you know, to be honest with you, I never thought that Mac Jones was going to be a franchise type quarterback. I thought where he'd end up in the NFL would be sort of a backup coming in off the bench. He's already the starter for the New England Patriots. So, you know, you look back now and you say, yeah, you know what? Alabama had a pretty good quarterback, probably much better than we gave him credit for. He's now, you know, he's now under Belichick's wing and doing well. Lou, you're quickly on Mac Jones, and then we'll move on.
Wally. They had all three of them on the one team.
Yeah.
Yep.
They had Jalen Hurts, who transferred over to Oklahoma.
Yep.
They had Tua, who was a first-round pick with Miami. And they had Mac Jones, who became a first-round pick to New England, all in the one same quarterback room. And the fourth one is Tua's brother, who's in Maryland, who's putting up big numbers. So figure that one out. Like, you know, we're talking maybe USC is quarterback university. Alabama, the last 6 or 7 years,
they're
pretty close.
Well, it's
what I like about it this year is that everybody's got a chance to win because, like you said, Ohio State hasn't played that well, Oklahoma hasn't played that well, Clemson hasn't played that well. So you're going to look at teams like Georgia, you're going to look at teams like A&M, you're going to look at Cincinnati, you're going to look at Florida. These are four teams, four schools that are right knocking on the door. That anybody, if anybody decides to to take a nap one weekend, they can move up into a number one and challenge for a national championship.
Anyways, on that note, I didn't get a chance to talk about my beloved Irish yet. I got to be honest, they haven't looked that great so far this year, although they're unbeaten. And I'll save my opportunity to talk about the Irish when we get Notre Dame legend Joe Theismann on later on in the show. We're going to talk some Blue Jays again. We've certainly as excited as we've been in a long time. We've got 2 weeks left in the season, and it's going to be a really, really fascinating run to the playoffs. We'll be right back with Mitch McBannon, reporter for Sports Illustrated, Blue Jays reporter. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we received questions on the new barbecue turkey bacon pizza. What kind of bacon is on it? Well, turkey bacon. It has a barbecue sauce base, red onions, pineapple, hot banana peppers, mozzarella cheese and chili flakes. Do I need to barbecue it? No, it comes fully cooked. What if I don't have a barbecue? Oh boy. Call Pizzaville at #3636 on your cell phone.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on the new AM 740, also in downtown Toronto, FM 96.7. We also stream on the internet, so if you can't get an AM radio or anything like that, you can listen into us on your computer, on your iPad, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour Mitch Bannon. Mitch is the Blue Jays reporter for Sports Illustrated. And it couldn't be a more perfect time to talk to Mitch. Good morning, Mitch. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, Mitch. Thanks for joining us. I will preface this by letting you know that I and my co-host, Naz Marchese, and also helping us out this morning, Lou Franceschetti. Naz and I are rabid Blue Jays fans. Unfortunately, Franceschetti's a New York Yankees fan, so we've been going to argue with him for the next couple of weeks. But we're excited about the Jays. It's been an incredible season in so many ways, watching these young terrors, for lack of a better word, all sort of mature and come together. And the statistics on some of these guys, Hernandez, Semien, Bichette, Guerrero, Gurriel Jr., Springer, are just remarkable. Your impressions of the Jays, Mitch, how have you seen this team develop, and what do you foresee in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it there. It has been an incredible season to watch this team kind of been thrown into the fire. They played in Florida, then they played in Buffalo, and then they come home. And it kind of really has been an odyssey for them. Honestly, they've gone through so much, and now they're exactly where you would want to be at this time of year. And there was a lot of points during this year where it didn't look like they were going to be playing meaningful baseball late into September, but they went on that kind of magical run for the last few weeks, and they put themselves an opportunity to make Blue Jays fans across Toronto and across this country tune into every game for the rest of the year.
And just for our listeners, as the Jays stand today, the Jays won yesterday. I believe the Yankees lost. So right now the Jays are in a wild card spot. The second one, they're one game behind the Red Sox for the first wild card and half a game ahead of the Yankees for the card. Naz, I'll turn it over to you.
Hi, Mitch. Ryu has had a tough time these past 8 starts. What's happening to him? He's suffering from a dead arm.
See, we talked to Ryu after his last start, and multiple people kind of asked him how he was feeling physically, and he basically said he felt fine, and that almost made it more frustrating that he wasn't able to perform. And you kind of look at his season this year, he's had his ups and he's had his downs, and he's the type of guy where he's getting to the age and he's the style of pitcher where if he's just a little bit off, it's going to fall off the rails like it has a few times here. He doesn't throw hard. He's all about kind of locating that changeup away, sneaking a couple fastballs by guys. And if he doesn't have his location, it's all going to be an issue for him. And we've seen that kind of flare up. But we know he still has kind of the ability to put together that seven inning, one run start that he showed all of last year and he slashed this year. It's just about putting it all together and refining his command for an entire start.
Lou?
What can I say?
Well,
you know what? They are having a one good or great year. I know I'll take all the abuse that I possibly can. I got broad shoulders, but at the end of the day, I'm going to rain on your party, gentlemen. This is one year that they've played over their head. How are they going to sign Marcus Semien and Mr. Ray at the end of the season if they payroll, if they don't want to go up to that $200 million payroll? Baseball is a funny sport that every year, a lot of teams are different than the year previous year. You look at the New, San Francisco Giants, the, what they're doing this year, whoever expected them. It was supposed to be San Diego and the LA Dodgers battling it out for the National League West. You got to give credit where credit is due, and the Jays are having a great year. They got a lot of bunch of young kids that don't know how to lose. They're having fun. They're coming to the ballpark knowing that they're in every game. And that goes by the, I think, two of the last eight games they came back and scored six runs in the bottom of the eighth to come back and beat, I can't remember who it was, and then they were no-hit by Baltimore, and they scored 11 runs in the in an inning, and they won that game. So I'll give credit when credit is due. They're having a great year. But, gentlemen, this isn't over yet, and we'll see what happens the last 3 years, the last 3 weeks of the season. And I will probably be in the stands for that second-last series against Toronto when the Yankees come to town.
Mitch, see what we have to deal with? Lou's always trying to rain on our parade. Anyways, we're talking to Mitch Bannon, Blue Jays reporter for Sports Illustrated. Mitch, interesting, this Blue Jays team has created some incredible stats, and one of them that was on your Twitter account a few weeks back. In the last series against the Yankees, the Jays never trailed at any point in time in that series, and the Yankees were never ahead at any time in that four-game series. First time it's happened to the New York Yankees since 1924. I thought I'd point that out, Lou, in case you missed that stat.
You know what, Wally? I got broad shoulders. You can give me all the abuse you want.
Anyways, Lou, I got to take advantage of having Mitch on the show. Mitch, as you can see, we have fun here. I wanted to, you know, obviously the MVP in the American League scene, there doesn't seem to be any question it's going to be Ohtani. Or is there any question, Mitch? Vladimir Guerrero has had an MVP-type season. Is there any room for Guerrero to be voted the MVP?
I think there's going to be a lot of discussion. There is a lot of discussion right now, but I'm not sure how much of that is just kind of our Toronto bubble, the Toronto media, the Toronto fans having that discussion. Kind of at the end of the day, the entire baseball world votes on that award, and all the reporters vote on that award. And how many of them are going to give the award to Vlad over Ohtani, I'm really not sure. He'll get a few first-place votes, probably, maybe from some of the Toronto reporters, maybe from a couple other AL East reporters who have seen him regularly. But I think you just look at what Ohtani's doing, and Vlad might win the Triple Crown, and that's only done like once every 50 years. But what Ohtani's doing is basically only ever been done once before by Babe Ruth. So I think it's Vlad's going to miss times this year and run into someone who's somehow having a more historical year than him.
Yeah, certainly it's been an incredible year. And before I turn it back to Naz, I wanted to just follow up on with you on the discussion about, you know, we're Toronto focused here and we see what happens in Toronto. But what are they saying about the Jays around Major League Baseball? What's the buzz outside, let's say, of Blue Jays Nation? How is this team regarded or commented about in around the league?
I think in the last 2 to 3 weeks, they've kind of put themselves on the map. I think people knew Vlad, they knew Bo, they knew the Jays were kind of having a decent year and hanging into it. But then when they went on that run in the last 3 weeks, I've seen a lot of national media talking about the team. They're like, oh, the kids. And then they're talking about Robbie Ray. They're realizing how good of a year Marcus Semien is having. I think this recent run and thrusting themselves right into the conversation in between Boston and New York in that wild card race has really made them part of everyday baseball conversation outside of Toronto. And I don't think Major League Baseball could dream for a better wild card race than Boston, Toronto, and New York. Three of their biggest markets in the American League kind of fighting it out for those last two spots down the stretch. And I think there's going to be a lot of conversation in Toronto and all over baseball about what the Jays can do if they get in the postseason.
Ness? Francisco Liriano for T. Hernandez. What a trade that mm-hmm. was by this new group of managers for the Jays. Your comment on Hernandez.
Yeah. That might go down as one of the most underrated trades in Blue Jay history if he keeps this up. He has been, he would be one of the best hitters, if not the best hitter, on multiple teams in Major League Baseball, and good teams too. He's having a crazy year. He missed 3 weeks with COVID at the beginning of the year and then came back and is going to maybe beat out Vlad for the RBI lead on the team and is, I think, fourth or fifth in the league in RBIs despite missing a few weeks. And he, over the last 2.5 seasons, a couple years ago, he got sent down to AAA to figure some stuff out. He came back up and has just been this guy since. I don't think there's any question that this is who Teoscar Hernandez is. He's an all-star. He's one of the best hitters in the American League. He's gotten a little better defensively. And, yeah, that Liriano deal, they took on a little Nori Aoki money, I think, to get him as well. But that was a true steal.
We're talking to Mitch Bannon. Mitch, you know, a lot of the focus, or most of the focus, is on the incredible bats that the Blue Jays have been putting up against the plate, and the incredible numbers, mind-blowing numbers in some of these games, you know, 11 runs in one inning, and it's just remarkable. Are we losing sight of the great season that Robbie Ray is having? Because he's... they're talking about a Cy Young quality season from the starter. Mitch?
Yeah, for sure. I think if we're not talking about Robbie Ray, we're missing arguably maybe the second or third best story on this team. He's having a crazy year. He's leading an underratedly amazing rotation. The Jays in last month have the third or fourth best ERA in all of baseball. Yeah, they're hitting for a bunch of runs, but then they're also not allowing any runs either. And it kind of starts and ends with Ray. He's the guy who hit a shaky start against Baltimore last week, but if you take that out of the equation, he's basically going 7 innings, giving up 1 or 2 runs, and winning every single start. It's kind of crazy considering they signed him for a 1-year, $8 million deal, looking like another steal as well. And he's positioning himself to be the starter for a wild card game if the Jays. And he's positioning himself to make a lot of money this offseason.
How do you think Montoya's going to manage? I mean, we're now he's at the point in the season where he started sort of, you've got to think ahead. Who's going to start what game when? And who's, you're almost trying to manage your starters so that, you know, your ace is on the mound if you're in a wild card game or a playoff game. How do you foresee Montoya managing his starters in the next few weeks? Which arms is he going to go to? Is he going to go with a 4-man? Is he going to go with a 5-man starting rotation? How do you see Montoya managing the pitching staff?
I think there's kind of a very clear pecking order that begins with Ray, rightfully so. I think if they make it to a wild card game and he's rested, he will be the guy. I don't think there's any question of that. And then I think your next guy after that is probably Berrios, who pitches today. And then Manoah, as a rookie, I think has earned that third starter job. And I think the question right now is, if Ryu in a playoff game, if they do get to a DS, kind of between Matt and Ryu for that fourth spot. And you've seen them in the last couple of rotation a little. They pushed up Berrios to today. They're pitching Ray tomorrow. And they bumped back Manoah to Tuesday. And they said that was to buy Manoah a couple extra days. But another thing it does is that sets up Ray and Berrios to pitch in that Yankee series, the second last series of the year. And then it could pit line up for one of them to pitch a potential wild card game. So we've already kind of seen them think 2-3 weeks ahead, whether or not they're admitting it, but they're definitely trying to rejig this rotation, get guys their 1-2-3s on normal rest to pitch the biggest games down the stretch and into a playoff.
Anyways, Mitch, we've got to let you go. We want to thank you. It's going to be an exciting few weeks now going forward in Blue Jays land. Just noticed the ratings, the TV ratings are the highest they've been since 2018. So certainly the fans are dialing in. We're thrilled to talk to you. You're a reporter for Sports Illustrated for the Blue Jays. And hopefully we get a chance to talk a few more times. And we'd love to see the Blue Jays in the World Series. Mitch, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate your time and your expertise.
No problem, guys. Have a great Sunday.
Thanks so much, Mitch Bannon. Gentlemen, we've got to go to break. We come back from the break. Who better to talk to as the NFL gets going than Notre Dame, Washington football team, and Toronto Argo legend, Joe Theismann. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised we all have things we should cut back on. For me half-brother Rayul, that's ordering inflatable toys. For others, it's carbs. So Pizzaville made the extra thin crust pizza. You get the same authentic Italian taste as our regular pizza, but with 2/3 less carbs. Because the last thing Rayul wants is an inflatable waist.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
From face-offs to playoffs, field goals to own goals, you're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740, 96.7 FM in Toronto, www.zoomerradio.ca, live streaming. We had promised Joe Theismann. We haven't been able to get a hold of him this morning. We will certainly keep trying. And if we're able to get him on the line, we'll certainly get him on as soon as we can. Naz, the NFL season's in full swing. Our beloved Buffalo Bills. Naz wasn't.
We called things, it last week.
Though. Things didn't go right last Sunday, Naz. A lot of controversy, some questionable coaching decisions, some fourth and ones that really, really cost the Bills dearly. Give credit to the Steelers. They, Bills were up after the first half. Steelers are a veteran team. With a veteran coach and
a great defense,
and they certainly bottled up Josh Allen and made the plays. Fantastic pass reception by that Pittsburgh Steelers receiver for the touchdown. They blocked the punt for a touchdown. They did what they had to do to win, and the Bills, in a lot of ways, gave it away. What happened, Ness?
They got outplayed by a better team that day. That's all. And they'll bounce back today, I think. It's very interesting. Last year they played Pittsburgh, and Josh Allen wasn't very good that day neither. And Pittsburgh seems to have his number.
And they had him off rhythm the entire game. They had him running around. Lou, your impressions of, I don't know if you got a chance to watch the Bills game. I'm sure you've saw the highlights. Not the result. Us Buffalo Bills, as they call them, the Bills Mafia, would have liked. Your impressions?
I did watch the game because it was very intriguing. I wanted to see if the Bills were the team of last year. I wanted to see if the Pittsburgh Steelers were the team of last year. And one thing came out is that Pittsburgh Steelers have a great defense, and that's the way they're going to win most of their games this year. They really challenged. They put a lot of pressure on Josh Allen. I didn't think Allen played that good of a game, but he missed a lot of wide open receivers. The game came down to one turnover. The blocked punt more or less turned the whole game around for the Steelers. It was a great physical game. I liked the way the Steelers came out. You know, they've got some work to do on the offensive side, but at the end of the day, there's no reason to push the panic button with the Buffalo Bills. They're going to be there at the end of the year. But the one thing they really have to work on is their running game. I don't think they can depend on Josh Allen to keep throwing the ball as much as they have over the last couple of years.
The running game has been irrelevant in the NFL for the past 2 or 3 years. What's happening with that? Then nobody runs the ball anymore.
I was just going to ask, well, you know, that's, you know, I guess you've got so much talent amongst quarterbacks nowadays. The quarterbacks are athletic. I think it's a good point, Naz. The game has, but you know, you do, if you want to be successful, you better have the threat of the run better be there, because the teams that end up making the runs in the playoffs have to have a ground game, because otherwise the coaches will figure out how to shut down your passing game. And talking about running game, guys, we got an opportunity to watch that great Alabama back, Najee Harris, in the Pittsburgh black and gold. Your impressions of Najee as a Pittsburgh Steeler, Luke?
You know what? He did the job that he had to do. He came up with a couple of big runs right at the end of the game there to bring the ball down to in the red zone. Again, it's going to be, you know, Naz said it, this league and pro football in general, even college football, it's turned into a wide open passing game. It's no more run the ball down your throat type of style. And that's why, you know, the tight ends are a lot more athletic. They're using them a lot more in the offensive formations. They got scat backs that are players that are 5'10", 5'11", 5'9", even, that can run the 40 in about 4.3. And they use all these weapons that they have to their advantage, because now the league has realized that it's entertainment type of game for the fans. And it is an offensive type of game.
It certainly is. Although, as we know, defenses
win championships.
Defensive win championships. And talking about defenses, Naz, your observations on the, and I agree with both of you. And it's like, you know, let's not make more than what it was. It's one game in a marathon. And they have 17 games in the NFL schedule now, if I'm not mistaken.
17. That's correct.
17. So there's another 16 to go. So there's a lot of football that still has to be played. So we don't want to get super excited about what happened last Sunday.
Well, you were talking about the defense of the Bills, right?
Yes.
Yep. The Bills' defense was awesome last week. There was no problem with the defense. They gave up a touchdown on a block kick. That's not the defense's fault. And they gave up 13 points. What do you want from the defense?
The defense played
really well.
Then I'm going to ask you to comment on some of the coaching decisions made by the Buffalo coach, Sean. Which I think can be fairly criticized for. A couple of fourth and ones. Was it two of them or three of them? I can't remember. Two of them for sure.
There was two, and he didn't go for either one.
Yeah, and I thought those were almost game momentum-shifting events, game-changing events. Certainly, you know, with the field position that they had, and if you've got a good defense, and if your defense is playing well, and you've got confidence in your defense, you know, and you're, why not just kick the ball and try and pin, I mean, after you lost the first one, I mean, I sort of understand the first one, but then the second one, is it fair to criticize the Buffalo coach?
Yes.
Should he be fairly criticized over those decisions at the times and the games that they happened and the circumstances that they happened?
The reason why you can criticize is because he went for fourth and eight, and he doesn't go for fourth and one twice. So does that make any sense to anybody, really?
Well, you know what? I just thought about it. The second fourth and one that they went to was a bad, bad play call. You know, it seemed like Pittsburgh was right in their huddle knowing exactly what was coming off, and you almost threw an option play to the running back, and he nailed him about 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. When you have all these weapons, on for you.
Yeah, I'd be, you know, if it's fourth and one, I've never been a big fan of any other run than other than straight up the gut. And if you don't have your confidence in your offensive lineman to get you 1 yard, then maybe you shouldn't be going on that play. You know, when you got to pitch it out, all kinds of things, different things can happen. And if the defensive player's anticipating that, and you saw it, he almost had the ball before the running back had the ball. That running back had no chance whatsoever. He was smothered 3 yards behind the line. I don't know, Naz. I've always said you want to do fourth and one, that's fine. Run it up the gut. And if you don't have the confidence in your offensive lineman, then maybe that's not the play. Or you do a play action. You really want to get adventurous?
Well,
then by all means, do a play action and throw it a quick out down the field. I got way more confidence in that than the plays that Buffalo called in those circumstances.
Wally, most of the teams go for it within the 40-yard line. They go for it. It's fourth and seven, fourth and six, because they can't kick it. They can't punt it because they're too close, right? So they have to go for it. And a lot of the times, 40 yards and in, they go for the fourth down.
Yeah, but I don't understand this thing about you're too close to. I got it that it's too far for your field goal kicker, but it's too far to punt it. What's the worst that can happen? They're going to get the ball back on their 20. Or
yeah, but it's 20-yard gain. What's the difference,
yeah,
really?
It's a huge difference. The field position starting from your 20 and starting from your 45, 50 is completely different. Or you know, have confidence in your kicker and your downfields team that now, you know, you're going to kick it and the ball's going to roll down to the 7 or 8 yard line and you're going to stop it. You know, I mean, that's the theory of that play. Anyways, we can debate that till the cows come home. At the end of the day, we're not getting paid the kind of money that the Buffalo coach is getting paid to make those decisions. So, you know, I got to think, you know, we can be here and we can criticize, and that's what fans do, and that's what makes it interesting. But, you know, he's the expert, and he makes the call, and he's got the guts to call it. And sometimes, you know, if you pull it off, you're a genius. And if you don't pull it off, you're going to get criticized, right? That's just the way the world works. And he's taking criticism, and, you know, he's so far, I've had no issues with him as a coach. I think he's done great things with the team. So we got 16 games to turn it around, and hopefully they do it today when they play the Dolphins.
They took a lot of penalties last week, too, which is uncommon for them, coach.
That could be a coaching thing. It's also an early season thing too. It takes time to get your rhythm and your timing and all that stuff. And I find that's usually a bigger problem, like in the first couple of games, than it is as the season goes on. But like you said, you know, Bills came within one game of going to the Super Bowl last year. They had a great season last year. There's no reason to believe this will certainly give them a kick in the pants. And today's the day that we start turning it around, guys. Around the league, any other surprises? The Packers got it handed to them. I found that result pretty astounding. And Tom Brady, at the age of 44, keeps marching on.
He says he's 50 now.
I mean. it's pretty remarkable. I mean, 44, he's still, you know, I usually use the cliche, he hasn't lost a step. I probably has lost a step. Only problem reason you don't notice it is because he's never, and this is not meant as a criticism, he's never had a step. I mean, he's played quarterback his entire career behind an offensive line that's done a fantastic job of protecting him, and really has never spent his career scrambling out of the pocket, and has never, aside from one season I remember about 10 years ago, has never really been injured. And I would think that contributes to his longevity, because he was in a fantastic situation in New England where, you know, he wasn't really hit all that often, and managed to find himself a great situation in Tampa. How do you explain Tom Brady doing this remarkable thing at his age?
Oh, the one thing I looked at, he's taking very good care of his body. He's a health nut. From everything that I read, he's eating the kind of foods that we don't eat. and he takes care of himself. He works out. He really never had any running ability to start off with, even coming out of University of Michigan. So his legs were never a factor, even though he's had a couple of knee surgeries the last couple of years. But he just makes smart decisions. I think that's the problem. That's the way that Tom Brady plays the game, even with New England. He's always got somebody in position to dunk the ball off whenever he gets pressured. And they've always had great offensive lines in front of him, so he never really gets banged up. And we all tend to slow up after the age of 40, but it seems like him, until you take a beating, you're going to keep doing the things that he's done. And it's remarkable at that age and what he's doing. And I think he might have another Super Bowl ring at the end of this year, the way they're going.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Tampa's got a well-balanced team. He's actually got more weapons in Tampa than he had in New England. I mean, he's got some pretty good receivers down there, and he's got a pretty good offensive line and a pretty strong defense. So for the Bucs to be back in the Super Bowl would not surprise me in the least. I think the other thing about Brady and 44 years old, and athletes are able to, because of the way they condition themselves, and they're all on nutrition diets, and they take much better care than they perhaps did 20-30 years ago. And you get the sense with Brady that he still loves playing. He's obviously, he wouldn't be playing otherwise, he obviously still loves playing football. He throws a touchdown pass, and he's excited. He jumps up and down, and he goes, runs up to his receiver, and all of that stuff. And he still has a passion for the game, which is remarkable after being in the league 20-plus years. And I ascribe that to the fact that he's never been beaten up. I'm sure a lot of quarterbacks that have spent their careers behind weak offensive lines, after a while, he says, I don't need this anymore. But Brady's remarkable. He just, you get the sense that he still, not the sense, it's obvious, he still loves playing NFL football. And at the age of 44, that's pretty remarkable. I don't know if I can't think of any other example of anybody in the NFL at that age. Guys, can you think of anybody that...
George Blanda.
Yeah, but he was a field goal kicker.
he was a backup quarterback, too.
And he was a backup quarterback. I think he retired at the age of 46 or 47, if I'm not mistaken. Of course, in other sports, you're starting to get guys in there. Zdeno Chara, who just signed with the New York Islanders, is now 44, I believe.
Yeah.
Chris Chelios played until I think he was 46 or 47, Lou. Wasn't he up there?
He was over 40. You got Fran Tarkenton, I think, that played with Minnesota back in the early 70s, late 60s. Bob Greasy.
Well, no, the Greasy didn't play into his 40s, did he? I don't think so, Lou. Yeah, I don't think his longevity was that long. But then you you can be playing into your 40s, but who's playing into their 40s playing like an all-star?
Yeah, Drew Brees was.
But then he played till he was what? Well, was he 40?
There's going to be a story in New Orleans with the new quarterback. Winston's going to be awesome for them. He's got so much talent.
Yeah, he certainly got off to a good result. There's no question about that. That was pretty remarkable. Let me go around the horn here, guys, since we're on NFL talk. And our apologies, we weren't able to connect with Joe Theismann this morning. Joe's been a good friend of the show in the past. I'm sure he will probably have him on in the next couple of weeks. We'll certainly keep trying. Guys, it's early still. Predictions. That's what sports fans do. Let's get the debate going. Let's talk about who you think will be the two top teams in the AFC that will make it to the Super Bowl, and the two top teams in the NFC that will make it make it to the final and then ultimately to the Super Bowl. So we want two coming out of the AFC to make it AFC final and then ultimately to the Super Bowl. And let's go to the NFC side. Naz, I'll start with you.
NFC, Tampa Bay and New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Yep.
Interesting. Lou?
I like the LA Rams.
Why?
I just think they have everything going. They got a great defense led with Aaron Donald. The defensive tackle.
Aaron Donald, yeah.
Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
And they got one of the Bosa brothers on the defensive side, on the defensive edge. They made a great trade in getting rid of Goff to Detroit and getting Matt Stafford, who's a, I think, probably a top five quarterback in football, and they got, I think they have all the ingredients to go to the finals. It's going to be a great game between them and Tampa.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I don't. Okay, Naz, on the AFC side,
Buffalo and Kansas City.
We're going to have a repeat of last year's. It'd be great to see that one played in Buffalo with a blizzard happening that day. That would be nice. be interesting winter football. Lou, got a minute left. Who you see coming out of the AFC?
I'm going to take Baltimore as one.
Interesting. Yeah,
they don't have much of a passing game because it's going to be all Lamar Jackson.
Yeah,
and I got to go with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, tough to bet against the Chiefs. It certainly is at this point in time. Naz, I will throw my picks in really quickly, and then we've got to go. I agree with you. I see Tampa and New Orleans on the NFC side. And on the AFC, I like the Chiefs, and I like the Cleveland Browns. Let's see what happens. On that note, guys, Lou, thanks for joining us. To our listeners, thanks for tuning in. It's 10 o'clock. Our producer's telling me it's time to go. To all, have a fantastic week. Be safe. We'll be back again next Sunday morning. Thanks so much for listening in.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.